The goblins thronged the parapet, climbing over their dead as they scrambled for the helo. Britain threw open a gate on Portcullis's loading bay and grabbed a soldier from the helicopter.
Leave it! Get the damn gate!
The hair on Britain's neck stood up as the smell of ozone filled the air. Another goblin, an aeromancer, painted white and wreathed in crackling lightning, looped over the helo's rotors. Two of the soldiers turned and dove through the gate. Fitzy appeared out of the helo's open bay, pistol in hand. The first goblin reached Britain. It leapt forward, slashing downward with a two-handed axe. He sidestepped the blow, catching the axe's haft and torquing his arm, sending the creature banging into the helo's side before dropping off the parapet walk. Britain turned, leveled the gate horizontally, and sent it slicing down the parapet. The Terramancer appeared at the end of his wooden fist, striding triumphantly over the tail boom. He paused just outside the range of the slowing rotors and gestured. The parapet walk erupted, sprouting into gnarled branches, blossoming with buds. Hooked wooden fingers reached for Britain and stopped.
Get back in the damn bird!
Britain raced back into the helo. Goblins were madly reaching in through the helicopter's broken windscreen. Britain opened a gate in the middle of them, slicing them and the helicopter's nose in half. The gate looked in on Portcullis's loading bay. James, the armorer, stood over the soldiers who had just arrived, buckling on a tactical vest. A few soldiers milled around him in various states of readiness.
Go, go!
Britain ran back to the parapet, where Fitzy stood over the Terramancer, slumped and bleeding. Slowly, Fitzy was overwhelmed.
Fitzy!
Then Britain was ripped off his feet, spinning in the air, his body whirling through hundreds of feet of empty air, the helo shrinking in the distance. He hung in the air. A goblin aeromancer faced him, its grimace cracking the white paint that covered its body. It leaned forward, grinning, prying one eye open wide. And then Britain was falling. He closed his eyes and concentrated on the soft couch in the recreation area at LSA Portcullis. Britain sprang to his feet and leapt off the back of the couch. He saw Dawn and the blonde desk officer staring open-mouthed. Then he'd opened another gate and jumped through, slamming shoulder-first into the goblins swarming Fitzy. The aeromancer swooped over them, a dark cloud spinning behind him.
Get out of here! Short thing!
Britain locked his arms around Fitzy's neck. A goblin squirmed between them, clinging to Fitzy's waist. Britain gripped Fitzy tight, pushing off with his thighs, opening up the gate behind him. They slid on the loading bay's smooth floor. It took them a moment to scramble free, the goblin crawling out from their midst. Fitzy grabbed the fur-covered lump of the goblin's head and slammed it into the concrete again and again.
Son of a fucking bitch!
Sweet baby Jesus, what the hell happened?
You wanna know what happened, James? Genius here pulled a bunch of heroics instead of getting himself to safety like he was ordered! You goddamn idiot! Do you have any idea what it would have meant if you had died? What if they captured you?
What the hell is wrong with you? I saved your goddamn life!
You're not in the life-saving business! You're in the shut the fuck up and do as you're told business! When I want to be saved, I will order you to do it!
Damn crazy.
You think this means I owe you? You think this means we're fucking buddies? You remember one thing, Contractor. I am not your friend. I am not your comrade in arms. I am here to make you into a righteous engine of war. Nothing more, nothing less. You're paid to be a weapon, not a hero. You remember that.
Shadow Coven sat in their usual place at the bar. Britain slumped moodily over his folded arms.
Fitzy was pissed.
Man, I bet. He just wanted you to leave him there to die?
Yep. The camp commandant met him at the flight line when I gated us back in. Dressed him down right there.
You're all right, and that's what matters. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
He's right. You did good. You got them out of there.
What was it Harlequin said to you? That we'd be fighting narco-terrorists? Enemies of our country? We slaughtered goblins last night. We must have killed 100 of them.
Come on, man. They're not the same ones. They're not like Marty. There are good goblins and bad goblins. You went after a defender tribe, Sorahad. Those are the same ones who attack the base every night. You know how many lives you saved by what you did?
No. I only know how many lives I took. Sorahad means defenders, right? What is it you suppose they're defending?
That's stupid. That's just their name for themselves. Of course they're gonna make it nice like that.
Marty entered and made his way to the bar.
Oh, Christ, Marty, you can't come here anymore. Fitz is gonna pitch a fit. He's laying down the law about us hanging out now.
Fitzy is...
Stop! Enough with that.
He's right, Marty. Fitzy's gone off the deep end lately. We don't want you to get in trouble.
You hurt? Big fight, no?
Yeah, big fight. Must have killed about 100 of your countrymen, Marty.
I no anger, Uskar. Sarahat, they fight. No help. You see, Birdhead? You see, Birdhead?
Yeah, a skull, painted red and orange. Marty, I saw that same symbol before, but I saw it in my own world, when I rescued some of my own people.
Lost? You are lost, people. I say you lost good. Sarahad say you lost bad.
What do you mean lost bad? Even if you think we're good and we hurt you...
Lost good. They Sarahad. They have the head on the pot. They say you lost bad. They fight bad. You okay?
Marty, that's not the point.
What's not the point?
A sock captain with confident eyes, young and trim, rose from one of the tables, walking carefully toward him. Britton could see the flash of his lapel pin, the Aromancer's blowing wind.
Chief Warrant Officer, these premises are off-limits to warrants?
Fitzy ignored him, jabbing a finger at Marty.
I thought I told you not to hang out with that little shit. Why can't you just follow orders, dammit?
You're not setting much of an example yourself. Civilian contractors can drink here, but you can't. Besides, you look like you've had enough already. Why don't we get you outside, and some fresh air will...
Get him the hell out of here! I see you talking with him, I swear to God you're both meat. Starting with him!
It's okay, sir, we were just...
Nobody's talking to you, needle dick!
Come on, Marty.
Where the hell are you going?
Following your orders, sir. Getting him out of here.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
Britton picked up speed, half-dragging the goblin down the track toward the cache.
Mister! He anger! I go! No problem, okay?
No, Marty. I'm not leaving you alone in the dark with him. Not like this. He'll kill you. Once we're back to the cache, we'll be fine.
Marty was silent as Britton dragged him along, Fitzy lurching behind, too drunk to catch up to them, but too fit and fast for them to lose him. Marty jerked his hand free, but matched Britton's pace as they trudged the rest of the way, and the lights of the giant hospital tent began gleaming in the distance. Britton stopped short. Marty kept up the pace, rushing forward and moving into the light of the tent.
Who the hell did that rat get off to?
He's gone, sir.
You're gonna learn to obey orders, Keystone. God is my witness, I will make you. You've got potential, but it only counts if you play on the team.
Britton remembered the report on Scylla.
They'd gladly cut into her brain, destroy her mind. Was that what happened to Billy? Was that why he shook and drooled under his mother's arms?
Was that what they would do to Britton if they decided that the tool was more trouble than it was worth?
These people can never be your family. This place can never be your home.
Push it too far, Keystone, and we can always give you a little reminder. The last one you'll ever need.
And that's why you have the ATTD. That's why they'll never take it out, no matter how loyal you become. Why earn your respect when they can own you outright?
Deep in his heart, he rebelled against the growing kernel of feeling that maybe Scylla was right.
Everybody knew she was a latent. The whole sudden perfect storm thing at the Video Music Awards, I mean, come on, man! A lot of people thought it was CGI, but not the folks who were there live. I mean, there's no way to fake weather on that grand a scale. Of course, the sock knew, but did they do anything about it? Hell no. There's always been two sets of laws in this country, a set for regular folks and a set for the elite. Report your latency or die, unless you're a senator's kid, a famous actress, or an NBA superstar. In that case, we can work with you. Artie Welch, Friday Morning Crazy Talk, 98.2 FM.
If Fitzy remembered the night's altercation, he gave no sign. But starting the next morning, the tempo of their training increased.
It's time you stopped being useless. You're going to be operating against selfers, and selfers use magic. You're soldiers. or as close as blood-sucking contractors can get to it. That's given you a range of skills in firearms, combat casualty care, hand-to-hand combat, and wilderness survival. Not to mention the courage, leadership, and discipline necessary to get tough jobs done. Why, I'd hazard to say that even without your magic, you'd be a force to be reckoned with. The Selfer has none of these traits. All he has is magic. Take that away from him, and you have a frightened child, helpless and ripe for the righteous punishment that you will mete out on behalf of the government of the United States and God Almighty, upon whom our sovereignty depends. And that's what we're going to teach you now. How to take that magic away. Suppression is a highly sophisticated art. It's an act of intricate skill rather than power. This is why rump latents like me wind up assigned to it so frequently. If you can learn the knack, and I assure you that you can and will, you can interdict anyone's magical capability. And that's the thing, isn't it? We all know that my magic is 10 times weaker than yours. But with proper training, that's just fine.
As he spoke, 3 nervous-looking novices filed into the compound. All 3 were male, broad-shouldered and tall.
SAOLCC has seen fit to tap Cepheus and Camilla Partalus Covens to loan us some Terramancers. These men were chosen because of their facility with non-sentient automatons, what we affectionately call tar babies.
As he spoke, the men spread their arms, and the soil before them bubbled upward until roughly man-shaped piles of earth swayed before them, chips of rock sparkling from within.
You may consider these tar babies as your incentive to get this right the first time. They will clobber the snot out of you until you can destroy them. The only way you can do that without getting me highly agitated is by suppressing the magical flow that animates them. You will do this by binding your own magical current to theirs, without giving it shape, such as a gate or a sentient elemental. This is conducted, like most magical exercises, largely by feel. The only way to learn it is to do it. So let's start learning.
The going was tougher than Britton expected. He stood across from the automaton. The novice behind it saluted and dropped into a MAC guard. Britton reached out a hand and tried to visualize his current flowing through the automaton. Before he could blink, a gate had opened in the middle of the creature, cutting it neatly in half. The novice behind backed out of his guard and raised his hands. Fresh earth flowed upward to fill the cracks, knitting the tar baby back together.
What part of don't use your magic except to suppress didn't you understand?
Sorry, sir, I didn't mean to. This is new to me.
My boot up your ass isn't new to you, and that's what's coming if you keep this crap up. Do it right, Keystone.
Downer's tar baby was already a pile of loose rocks and clods of dirt.
Ha! It's easy.
How the hell are you doing it?
It's like there's a string from the novice to the tar baby. Try opening your gate there.
It's not group therapy, Keystone!
The novice charged the automaton forward. Britton focused on the image of a chain connecting novice and tar baby and tried again. His mind flashed a vision of Portcullis's loading bay out of habit, and for a moment a gate flashed open in front of the novice's face.
Damn it!
Britton sidestepped a few paces and raised a hand, concentrated on calling the magic, binding it to the thread between Tar Baby and Novice, pushing all other thoughts from his mind. Britton could feel his flow pushed outward, intersecting with the novice's. The pressure of the foreign flow interleaved with his own, a gentle pulsing in his chest.
Ah, I got it, sir!
Lucky thing, too! Let's see you do it again.
After practice, Britton decided to visit Therese in the cache. He learned that she was in the burn ward and quickly went to that part of the hospital. A quick scan of the ward revealed Therese. She bent over an unconscious patient whose face, neck, and arm were a mottled mass of charred skin. Her eyes were closed as her hands roved over the burned tissue, leaving pink, healthy skin beneath. In a moment, Therese opened her eyes, meeting Britton's. A broad grin spread across her face, and she nodded at him.
My hero returns.
So, when do you get off?
I can take a few minutes if you'd like to get caught up.
He nodded, and she led him through a series of canvas-covered walkways to a heated tent. Medical workers, military and contractor, were spread out among them, eating and chatting. Britton sat down on a bench, and Therese slid along next to him, her knee bumping his.
I go back to the SAS about once a week to check up on folks, and you'll be pleased to hear that Wave Sign's fine. They didn't allow it at first, but I put up a fuss, and they caved. You'd be amazed how much leeway they give you when you've got a rare and valuable talent.
Tell me about it. You've been working with Marty?
The Goblin? He's so great. He's been showing me around since I got here, helping me. I figured he was someone important in his tribe. The other Goblins pretty much bow to him. How's Downer doing?
Fine, I guess. She won't say a word about it. You're an amazing healer, Therese. There's no evidence she was ever hurt, but...
She's a strong girl. She'll be okay.
You think?
She has to be. This is her life now.
Therese...
What, Oscar?
Are you happy that you, you know, raised the flag? That you agreed to cooperate?
On the whole, yes. I mean, Hayes is a bastard, and there's a lot of admin BS to put up with, but overall, I like it. Even if I disagree with the overall organization, even if they basically own my life, in the end, my magic still helps people. People are alive and whole because of me. I can sleep at night knowing that. What about you?
I don't know. At first, I was sure I was doing the right thing. I mean, Swift is so stupid and useless, and he's dragging Wavesign down with him. After we saved those Marines, I really thought I'd made the right call. When we took down the Sulphur in the sewers, she was like a demon out of a nightmare. After that, I was absolutely sure we were on the right side. I felt like you do now, that I was ultimately doing good, that in the balance, it was right to cooperate. But they've got me killing the natives here now. They treat Marty like dirt. In the end, I can't shake this feeling like no matter how much good I'll do, I'll always belong to them. Fitzy called me a weapon the other day. I don't know if I can live like that.
You sound like Scylla. Oh, God, Oscar, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that.
It's okay. I know she's nuts, and I know she's a murderer. But you have to admit that some of the things she says make sense. I guess that's what scares me. Therese, you said before that you needed time to get good enough to get this thing out of my chest. Are you good enough now?
She placed his hand on his chest and paused, eyes closed.
I can see it. Man, whoever put it in there was good. Molding heart flesh is tricky stuff, at least when you're trying to keep it beating.
Can you do it?
I don't know, Oscar. To be honest, it'd be a long shot. Even if I was confident that I could do it, you'd need something for the pain. It's gonna hurt like hell. You're not gonna be able to gate anywhere if you die of shock.
It didn't work out so well the last time I had someone steal from the cache.
Goblin contractors don't have the access that I do. I just need some time. I'd also need some time to do the work.
What happened to Specialist Linko?
Who?
He was in the burn unit.
Oh, they moved him. We've got the burns covered, but there's an infection. I boosted his immune response, but it's touch and go right now. You know him?
Later. We've been talking way too long. I should let you get back to work.
No sooner had he spoken than Captain Hayes appeared at their table.
Everything all right in here?
Fine, sir. We're just finishing up.
You disappeared from the floor, Therese. We just had a Humvee hit outside the wire. You're needed back in trauma.
Be right there, sir. That fat bastard. I haven't seen him help a single patient since I've been here. He's always back in the special projects tent. What the hell are they doing back there?
Research. And they wonder why half the countryside is up in arms against them. We meet in the OC for drinks most nights. Can you make it there?
Things get insane here at night, Oscar. But that's when most of the attacks happen and the worst of the wounded come in.
It's really good to see you again, Therese.
Get out of here. I'll get to the OC tonight if I can. If worse comes to worst, you know where to find me.
Anticipating future theaters of war is the responsibility of every staff officer. The 21st century saw the addition of space and cyberspace to the traditional realms of air, sea, and land. It is time for us to begin consideration of arcane or magical space as an arena where operational preparation of combat environment should be considered. Much study is still needed to illuminate this developing field, but as a nation, we can only gain by getting out in front of the planning process before our enemies do. Lieutenant Scott Dyson, United States Navy. Final paper for Masters of Strategic Conflict Studies, Maritime College of the Armed Forces.
Britain sat in the OC with the rest of the coven, celebrating their new skill. Britain's stomach churned as his eyes swept the coven. These people were his friends, weren't they? The army might own them all, but they could still care about one another.
You okay?
Yeah, just thinking about when I was running is all.
Why bother? You're not running anymore.
No, you're right. I'm not running anymore.
Come on, more drinks for everyone!
They reported to Trailer B6 with slightly aching heads the next morning. Fitzy leaned against the whiteboard, A pale, thin-lipped man in a brown uniform stood beside him, the newcomer's shoulder patched with an eagle surmounting a buffalo. Gold script curled beneath the symbols. United States Department of the Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Morning, campers. Allow me to introduce Captain Day from BIA's Law Enforcement Division. Command has, despite my better judgment, determined you to be at a stage in your training where you can be of use to your country, in something more significant than mucking about sewer systems or beating up on the locals here. The Great Reawakening has given a lot of people some funny ideas. The funniest are held by the Mescalero Band of the Apache Nation, who occupy a substantial swath of New Mexico. These folks got the idea that not only is their territory autonomous, it's sovereign, and they fully seceded from the United States of America. The first thing their tribal council did was to legalize the use of magic in the confines of this supposed sovereign state, with results that you have seen. The death toll of this insurgency currently stands at over 2,000 U.S. Armed Services personnel, with an additional 500 sworn law enforcement officers and an undisclosed number of civilian advisors. Even worse, this minority of selfers keeps the majority of law-abiding Apaches from living in peace with us. They want to return to the old ways, whatever the hell that means, and consider anyone who doesn't agree with them as an enemy collaborator worthy of death. Keep that in mind when you consider the crocodile tears of all these sympathizers who'd like to see these folks cut loose. Unregulated magic is a pretty idea for those who don't have to deal with it, but I'm pretty sure Captain Day here will agree that the real thing is nasty business. You've got a rare opportunity to stop this death toll in its tracks, and Captain Day is going to tell you how.
Gentlemen, we have a rare opportunity to make a serious dent in the enemy's order of battle. The Tribal Council's most important general is a selfer called Chato.
Captain Day turned to the overhead projection image displayed on the whiteboard. It depicted a man with old eyes. His leathern, wind-scoured skin made his age difficult to discern, but his long black hair, tied with a red bandana, looked thick and young.
Don't get nostalgic for the noble savage getup. This man is personally responsible for the Ruidoso massacre, including taking out the airlift that went in for the survivors. It remains the biggest tragedy American first responders have ever suffered. Chato's capture could lead to a ton of actionable information that we could use to wrap up this firefight once and for all. More importantly, Chato is a rallying point, and taking him out of the fight would seriously lower enemy morale.
So why now? Why is he suddenly vulnerable?
Chato cast off his wife when she decided she wanted to join the modern world. Cut her up pretty bad. Apache custom is to slit the noses of women who betray their husbands. They call her Nozzlekitch now. Means slit nose. That he let her live is amazing enough, but now he's shown a